This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for August 4th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, train freight issues are still plaguing agribusinesses. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports on farmers' decisions regarding storing the upcoming bumper corn crop. And the folk from Earth Risk Technologies will be by with the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter wheat, a September variety, 638 and a half, up 5 3/4. December settled at 650 and a half, up 7. Soft September wheat settled at 544, up 9 3/4. December, 564 and a half, up 11 and a quarter. September corn settled at 358 and 3/4, up 6 and a quarter. December, 369 and a quarter, up 7. March of 15 settled at 382, up 7 and a quarter. May, 390 and a quarter, up 7. July, 397 and 3/4, up 7. August soybeans settled at 1232 and a half, up 17 and a half. September, 1095 and a quarter, up 21 and 3/4. November, 1079 and a half, up 21. January, 1088, up 21 and a quarter. August soybean meal settled at 388.20, up 70 cents. August soybean oil settled at 3602, up 57. Last trades, August live cattle, 158.42 and a half, up 112 and a half. August feeders, 121.52 and a half, up 125. And August lean hogs settling at 117.10, down 92 and one half. And those are Monday's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says weather conditions across the U.S. Midwest will be nearly ideal over the next 2 weeks. Timely rainfall is expected throughout the region. Dry areas in the southwestern Corn Belt will get some needed rain. Temperatures will be near normal during most of the next 2 weeks, with yield potentials for most summer crops remaining very high. U.S. rainfall during the weekend was scattered across the Midwest. Rainfall was greatest from central Illinois to Wisconsin, northwestern Missouri and northeastern Kansas to western Iowa, in northwestern Indiana, and from Ohio into a part of Michigan. Each of these areas reported 2/10 to 7/10 inch of rain, with local totals over 1 inch. The U.S. Southern Plains will be relatively dry this week, with temperatures seasonably warm to hot. Daily high temperatures this week will be in the 90s to slightly over 100 degrees.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimball of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, your loan must have come through over the weekend. You were able to get out and buy some steaks, enjoy them, and look at what happened. Cattle futures up and live cattle up today. Thank you, Kurt.
Oh, man, there's nothing better than good old ribeye on the grill, but like you say, it's pricey. It's going to remain pricey for a while and through here. Futures are at discounts where some cash trades taking place, so we'll see how things develop in here. But like you say, nothing better than cooking a steak out.
Turn our attention to the grains, and oh, what an interesting technical day it turns out to be for Novi beans and Deeves corn. Both post new lows for their moves and come out of the well and in the corn with pretty good strength.
Yeah, we posted some price reversals to the upside, made some new lows, and was able to close higher on the day, suggesting maybe we could try to get a change in trend to develop here. You know, technically looking pretty good for some recovery here. We just need to make sure we follow through. Key things to watch is this 371 and a half area. That's about 62% back up to last week's high. And in the soybeans, we'll be watching this 1083 and a quarter, and that's halfway back up to those highs we made there back in the end of July. So there's some things to watch. The key is follow through and see if we can gather some additional fundamental news to sort of confirm that we have a low in place. Weather's going to be front and foremost important thing to watch. There's some areas that's been missing rain. Social media had pretty much a full day of showing some firing action in some areas, tipping back. And then, too, you know, the beans are starting to see a little bit of stress in some areas. But producers feel, you know, if we can get some moisture in here, we're still going to have a fairly large crop there, because there's still some areas that looks awful good to make up some for the areas that might be struggling, Dave.
I guess there's less confidence today than there was at the end of last week that those advertised rain events would actually hit all of the key dry areas that go down there in southern Illinois into the southwestern Corn Belt.
Yeah, you know, there's some areas, you know, this is kind of hit and miss, and, you know, there was some good one-inch rains in a few areas, and not everyone received it, and two, up in Minnesota, southern Minnesota, you know, they had some big rains earlier and late getting in, and the whole water spigot shut off for them in some areas there. So we'll see what the crop conditions report shows, see if there's more than a 1% or 2% drop. But this time of year, seasonally, we see the conditions deteriorate as the plant starts to set down and starts to go the other way. But we'll have some private estimates. I think FC Stone's out here today. Then we'll have a supposedly informant tomorrow. Then we'll start getting into some other private crop tours in the course of the USDA on August 12th.
And everybody and their brother seems to say it's 170 or better at this point.
Well, at this point, I would think so. You know, a lot of optimism there. Looks good. And, you know, producers have been out in it. That's what they're relaying. For those guys not out in it, they're passing on what their neighbors see. And, you know, there's, you know, enthusiasm, two ears on a stock, and, you know, maybe that second ear might develop into something. And there's some, quite a few guys I know it's good because they're low-balling things out there. But there's going to be ample supply here as we move into this fall. We'll see, you know, how fast the producer lets go of it. But at this point in time, everybody's kind of comfortable with production, hoping for some lower prices to get some big revenue checks, or else some higher prices here to get caught up on sales. So there's some out there for a little bit of everyone.
Okay. If we do not see huge demand between now and harvest, what would be your best estimate here on the eastern Corn Belt for cash prices for corn come harvest time?
Well, there's huge demand in beans. It's on the books, and the pressure is on the production side of the equation on the bean side. Asia's been buying beans ahead of time. You got to be careful because some of that's option origin there, and it can be switched. But the bean sector is a function now to make sure we have the production to satisfy that demand there. The corn side, that's the big one there.
Mm-hmm.
Corn exports still struggle. We've lost some world demand on feed grains in general. Asia does not want our corn at this present time, so it's got its work cut out. My best guess is December futures, 330, 325, the commercial grain traders I visit with, are just sort of waiting for the moment to be able to get some fairly good coverage at those levels.
What does wheat have to say about this equation going into the fall?
Well, big picture-wise, there's ample supplies of wheat worldwide. There's ample supplies here in the U.S., too. We can argue quality issues. That's going to be a concern in some areas. South Dakota, there's some elevators there. It's not taking any wheat because they can't find the rail transportation to get it to move, so it's going to have different effects in different parts of the country. But the thing on wheat all winter long, I probably said this a million times, and everybody's been listening to probably hearing this, they bought beans and sold wheat on the spread, and we're in the time window in here, and we're seasonally, that spread gets unwound, where wheat could probably be kind of flat-lined in through here, and corn and beans lose ground to wheat.
All right, I'm a producer that has way more corn than I have marketed, in part because I didn't anticipate having this kind of a crop. At these prices, what are some of the things I can do in terms? And I'm a little bit of a risk taker. I'm willing to maybe double down in some way.
Well, I think over the near term, there's still downside risk, and there's still a play to the downside to pick up, 20 to 30 cents conservatively. And I think you play the downside or play a move to the downside to pick up a little extra value with the idea here this fall we kind of double down. Because what you're going to hear is I'm going to store it and I'm going to sell if we get a 30, 40 cent rally. Well, what happens is, we get a fall low, we start to move up, but we don't get to 30, we get to 29. So by sort of doubling down here and buying some strategies here to take advantage of up move, the market actually has to go up 15 cents. 15 plus 15 is 30. So you've got a lot more leverage to work with, and that's the only way you can play catch up in through here to get to where you need to pay some bills.
Thank you very much, Kurt.
Take care, Dave.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
In agricultural news, elevators in the Northern Plains are having a challenging time finding enough space to store all of the incoming grain due to a bumper wheat crop. Grain elevators on the Rapid City Pierre and Eastern Railroad are nearly filling up with a high-yield winter wheat harvest. In at least one case, an elevator has had to pile winter wheat on the ground, and another elevator was reportedly bagging it because there was no cars to move the grain. The winter wheat harvest is only 40% done and so far is yielding 75 to 90 bushels to the acre. Grain is not the only industry hurt by the train backlog. A La Crosse, Wisconsin area power plant is reported to be almost out of coal to run their power plant. And rail delivery issues continue to plague the ethanol industry amid congestion in Chicago and delays for shipments out of the Midwest to the coasts. This past spring, shortages of rail cars to move ethanol from plants to key hubs caused prices to surge higher. The logistics problems also caused many plants to slow run times because they were unable to move product. Valero Energy Corporation is buying corn ahead of the expected startup within the next month of the company's 110 million gallon a year ethanol plant in Mount Vernon, Indiana. The plant is the largest corn-based ethanol plant not currently operating in the U.S. Valero spokesman Bill Day declined to comment on exact timing of the plant's restart, but cash traders say the plant could be back online by early September. The facility in southern Indiana, located along the lower Ohio River, has been shut down for about 2 years. A small farmers cooperative in Colonna, Iowa, has officially opened up the state's largest solar farm. The Eagle Point Solar Array is about 2,900 solar panels on 4.5 acres. The solar array will generate 800 kilowatts, totaling 1 million kilowatt hours of energy per year. Farmers Electric Co-op said that was enough energy to power about 123 homes. The project will mainly supply power to an adjacent commercial egg farm. The installation cost was about $2.2 million, but will pay for itself in less than 8 years. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for this market report comes from Country Financial, providing generations of Central Illinois farmers with crop hail insurance programs for individual producers, immediate family member, or tenant-landlord relationships. More information is available from your local Country Financial representative or at country-crop.com.
The majority of the annual U.S. corn harvest is put into storage. The question for farmers each fall is, where will it be stored? Todd Gleason has more on the answer to this question.
The question is really not so much where will the corn be stored, but who will own it while it is being stored. University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good weighed this problem in his July 29th weekly outlook. You can find it on the FarmDoc Daily website. Here's how Good lays out the problem. He says that portion of the crop that has not been sold can be sold at harvest for someone else to store, or the producer can store the crop either on the farm or in commercial facilities. For the portion of the crop stored by the producer, the second question is whether the stored crop should be priced for later delivery or held unpriced.
That decision is influenced by the magnitude of the carry in the corn market, the cost of storage, and expectations about the change in corn prices. For corn that is stored and priced for later delivery, the price for later delivery obviously needs to exceed the cost of storage. For forward cash sales, the difference between the forward bids for alternative delivery dates and the spot bid can be compared to the cost of storage to determine the net returns to storage.
Let's deal first with basis. This is the difference between the price offered for corn in the lead month futures contract and the local cash bid.
Basis levels and basis patterns vary considerably by location, so that an example of the likely returns to storage that is representative of all locations is not possible. In central Illinois, our average harvest bids on July 25th were 31 cents under December futures. With a July-December spread of nearly 27 cents, the average harvest bid was 58 cents under July 2015 futures. If that basis is near negative 10 cents in mid-June 2015, as it was this year, then the market is offering about 48 cents return for corn that is hedged and stored from harvest until mid-June next year.
With interest cost of about 11 cents, that's the value of the crop multiplied by the value of time, otherwise known as interest on the value, the return to storage is positive if the storage costs are less than 37 cents. That's per grain stored in the elevator where the costs are higher, says Darrell Good.
With out-of-pocket on-farm storage costs likely to be considerably less than 37 cents for most producers, there is very strong incentive to fully utilize the on-farm storage capacity.
So the corn market is currently encouraging farmers to store the crop. This decision could be made now with forward sales or by hedging in the futures market. However, Darrell Good says the opportunities today are unlikely to disappear anytime soon, so long as the crop expectations for corn remain big. Really, the question then is whether or not to act on the sale. Good doesn't think so. He says the big crop year patterns tend to bottom prices in the fall and then to build higher into the spring. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with Cash Grain Analysis is Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Internally in your offices, as you're looking at this big bumper crop of corn and soybeans, which will be hitting you this fall, what kind of logistical things are you talking about?
Well, number one, we're trying to get the grain moved into the elevator. I mean, it's going to take a lot of extra trucks. It's going to take longer hours to get everything unloaded. It's going to take the dryers operating at peak capacity. So we're getting everything that we can do ahead of time on the inbound to get ready for the inbound traffic. And then on the outbound, we're kind of at the mercy of the railroads, and we will see if they improve their performance. Not real hopeful. I think we'll still see lots of piles on the ground as we wait for trains to show up in a timely fashion.
Could this be one of the biggest crops you've ever taken in?
Yes, yes. I think here in central Illinois especially, we're looking at breaking county records by a wide margin. I think you'll see some of the previous county records that we set in 2009 and 2013 easily eclipsed by 15 to 20, maybe even 25 bushels in certain counties.
A number of years ago, if we were to have this, I would have said to you, you're going to run out of storage, but I suspect farmers are going to take advantage of every square inch of on-farm storage that they have. Do you have any kind of a handle on at least in Champaign County, how much on-farm storage there is?
I don't know that I have a good number on that, but the one thing I do know is that even though yields may be up 20%, planted acres for corn were down probably 10%. You know, the market was not real encouraging last year, and so farmers planted more beans and as a result planted less corn. So even though we've got a bigger yield, that doesn't translate into the same number of percentage increase on bushels, because we did plant, I'd say, 10, maybe even 15% less corn acres around here than we did a year ago.
What other things are you thinking about ahead of the harvest?
Well, I was just listening to Daryl Good on the radio, on your radio show, and I think he made a good point. We're going to have to get back. Some people have only been farming for 3 or 4 years may not remember this, but us old-timers remember capturing carry. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to lock in the carry while it's there, you know, and instead of just putting the grain in the bin and forgetting about it, because, as Daryl said, there's 30 to 40 cents return if you put it in the bin and hedge it. If you don't hedge it, that 30 or 40 cents may or may not be there by next summer.
Why don't we get your prices today then, Greg?
All right. We've got cash corn at $3.58. New crop corn is $3.42. Cash beans are $12.39. New beans are $10.59. And wheat is $5.29.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather from the folks at Earth Risk Technologies in Chicago. It's National Chocolate Chip Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1608, John Tradescant was born. He succeeded his father as naturalist and gardener to Charles I. In 1693, Dom Perignon discovered the process for making champagne. In 1755, Nicolas Jacques Conti was born. He invented the modern graphite pencil. He was also commissioned by Napoleon as chief of the balloon corps in Egypt, where among his responsibilities, he invented ways to improvise tools and machines necessary to provide bread and cloth. In 1795, Governor Emerson was born.
best known as an American statistician. In retirement, he studied peach culture, the use of phosphate and guano fertilizers. In 1863, Alexander McAdey was born, an American meteorologist. He was a pioneer in employing kites in the exploration of high-altitude air conditions. He also invented devices to protect fruit from frost. And in 1958, the first potato flake manufacturing plant opened in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is Mark Russo from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated. He is in Chicago. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hey, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, it is National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day. So can you throw those people who are in the drier areas of the Corn Belt, southern Illinois, southwestern Corn Belt, a cookie, and let them know that the forecast that we've been talking about for a better part of a week is actually to come to true later this week?
Well, in the meteorological community, we don't call them cookies, but we tend to call them vorticity maximums. So there's your word of the day from a weather standpoint in technical terms here. But yeah, we see coming up later on this week in the form of upper vortmax or upper level disturbance coming through the Corn Belt and providing what we think is going to be a very good opportunity for rain, not only here across Illinois, but across actually much of the Corn Belt, especially in some of those driest areas, namely southern Minnesota, Iowa, portions of Missouri, and pockets here in Indiana and Illinois. But overall, our forecast for this week is calling for approximately 65% coverage of the Corn Belt amounts in the range of 0.3 to 1.3 inches, and some locally 2-inch amounts. So for those listeners that have not yet received rain, at least it's a good opportunity here by the end of this week.
And temperatures near normal for the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no sign of any of our heat ridge that we focus on at this time of year. The main ridging of high pressure is out across the western U.S., and we have some weak troughing of low pressure here in the middle of the country, and that will keep temperatures near to even slightly cooler than normal at times, and no sign of any extreme heat, really, through mid-month.
And can you push it out a little bit further and get us at least one more decent rain event for those who are waiting on their soybean crops?
Yeah, even with this opportunity here this week, and even as we look out ahead, weeks 2 and 3 looks kind of more of the same as what you'll see here this week, meaning more opportunities for rainfall. No sign of any turn to a wetter than normal pattern, which would kind of be ideal now, considering the areas that have dried out here in recent weeks. But nonetheless, we see additional opportunities here going forward, and kind of an end here of this kind of more widespread dryness or lack of rain development we've seen in recent weeks.
And if there is a troubling spot in the U.S., where is it? Does it still remain out in the California area?
Yeah, absolutely. That's been the driest and hottest area here of late, and no sign of that changing as the pattern looks locked into place through mid-month.
Thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome, Dave.
Mark Russo of Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Have you subscribed to our free Ag e-newsletter? You can do that now by going to our website, willag.org. That's willag.org. Click on the subscribe link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.
more information.